This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our poet is Shirley Brewer, and here she is.
Making change. I buy a green checker taxi at a junkyard, fix it up, including the meter, and drive around town charging myself for every mile. I spend the money on travel, a month in Venice, 3 weeks in France, but always I come back to my green checker cab, hanging souvenirs in the rearview mirror. When my schedule allows, I pick up fares, take them to a museum, regardless of their destination. Make time for culture, I say. Arrayed in accessories, resplendent in the sun, I wave at strangers with both hands, steering at last from the inside.
That is Shirley Brewer. There is no one you will enjoy more in the field of poetry. She has books out, and they are A Little Breast Music, and Afterwards, and Bistro in Another Realm. But she's so many things. But the best thing I love is that she makes me happy. So tell me your approach to poetry and why you are so unique.
Why am I unique? Well,
you have a ring on every finger. That's for starters.
I do like accessories. So this Making Change was actually my very first published poem. And it was in the Edison Literary Review, and the editor asked me for this poem. And I thought that's how poetry worked. Well, I soon found out that it doesn't work that way. You get many, many, many rejections. But this poem I wrote right around the time I left my first career of speech therapy and decided I was going to become a poet. And I didn't really know how I was going to do it. But after I wrote this poem and I wrote those lines steering from the at last from the inside, this became my slogan, my help, my motivation to keep going.
Well, it's taking you a lot of places, and it takes you now to The Poet and the Poem. And we would like to hear two in a row so that they really get to know what I know.
Okay, this first poem is I guess we would call it an Ars Poetica. Poems and Plums. My grandmother kept glass bowls filled with fruit. She fussed over the arrangement. Where should the lemons go? Would green grapes eclipse the limes? I learned from an early age the delicate power of place. I collect bowls of words resting in random order until I pluck them for a poem. My hand hesitates before each choice. How bold I am to tell these plums. I know their rightful space. And Mixing Manhattans in Heaven. When skies drizzle over Baltimore, I taste bourbon in the air and know my parents are drinking Manhattans, two each, in a bistro in another realm, where ice cubes like stars clink into night, maraschino cherries dazzle the winter-weary earth. After cocktails, my father leads the choir, blends a bevy of languages into song. My mother crochets a pearl afghan every angel covets. My parents lounge, share a cloud, reminisce about how they met at a bus stop in the spring of 1940. I want one more happy hour with them, a wedge of time to toast their light, the way they shape this new green season.
That's Shirley Brewer, and she is a poet and an educator. She serves as poet in residence at the George Washington Carver Center for the Arts and Technology in Baltimore, and she also runs a creative writing workshop for seniors at Passenger Press, which is a Baltimore press that works for writers over 50, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. How do you think you teach? How are you at it?
Well, I really like to... When I teach, I like to help my students, whatever their ages are, to think about creative thinking, I guess, to think about making connections between things that we don't ordinarily connect. So I always start with any of my workshops with an exercise with those paint cards from Home Depot that have all the different colors, and then each color has a name. So I have them pick a color that appeals to them. Maybe there are five strips of blue, and then pick a name like mermaid hacienda. And that color becomes their color name for that lesson. So right away we get into metaphor. So I'm not Shirley Brewer today. I'm Mermaid Hacienda. I just pulled that out of the blue.
That is terrific.
And that's the way I start all my workshops. It's just starting with metaphor. It's starting about making those connections between two things that don't ordinarily go together.
And then how do you get them to write?
Well, from there, I have an exercise. For instance, one is called a two-tone exercise, where they pick a color that they like the mermaid, and then they pick a color that they don't like. And then they do a two-tone exercise, and they write about themselves. You know, some days I'm a mermaid, and other days I'm a dark tunnel.
I like it very
you know?
Much.
And so then they begin with themselves, and then from there they can go
that
into
is
other
brilliant.
Into
and
other
I know
things.
You went to Johns Hopkins, which was a little less playful. And you got your MFA there, right?
No, I didn't go to Hopkins. I live near Hopkins, but I went to the University of Baltimore.
Okay, well, it's within a block.
Within
it doesn't
it's
matter.
It's in the neighborhood.
Yes.
It's in the same neighborhood,
and I
right,
think probably
exactly.
You got to express who you are much better.
Well, we took a creativity class there at the University of Baltimore, and one of our exercises was to go on a field trip to the Baltimore Zoo, where we chose an animal, and I chose the pink flamingo. And I ended up writing 50 haiku about pink flamingos, so I consider that's a real Baltimore thing.
That you make.
But I was heading for the tigers, and on the way to the tigers, I saw the pink flamingos. I never got to the tigers.
Well, there's your title of the next book. I never got to the Tigers.
I never got to the Tigers.
But Cheryl, you got someplace else. You go at a lot of other places. So let's hear some of them.
This is a poem I wrote at the Winter Poetry and Prose Getaway in New Jersey in a workshop with Stephen Dunn, who is, I consider, one of the greatest American poets and is a mentor and a friend. It's called Signature. I've lost a uterus, a gallbladder, and a man with a mustache who would have been my husband. I gave the dress away, sold the ring, became an evangelist stripper. Now I mix salves from secret recipes at the Rosebud Perfume Company, founded in 1892. I love old stuff, even Jell-O, the way its jewel colors tremble and glow. Mornings I dab vanilla extract on my nipples to jumpstart my day. Sometimes I wink at younger men from my lavender hearse. A goddess needs space for accessories.
Oh, Shirley.
That poem was in the Nasty Women Poets, an unapologetic anthology of subversive verse.
I remember that anthology. The thing is that you are unapologetic yourself, and no one has been able to take away your inimitable Shirley-ness. No first grade teacher could have done it. No eighth grade teacher could have done it. You were born an artist, weren't you?
Well, I've loved words since I was very young. I was writing fairy tales in the second grade.
But one thing that you haven't mentioned and has made you distinctive is it true, truth or dare, that you were the voice of the reindeer at Hutzler's department store?
Yes, Christmas of 1983, I was.
And how did that work out for you?
Well, it was terrific. The want ad said speech students be the voice of a reindeer, and I was a speech therapist, so I thought I'd apply. And there really weren't very many people applying for that post. But at any rate, I did it for just one season, 1 year, and I had to do two voices. Tinsel was the female, and Bo was the male reindeer. And I had to talk to children, and it was really a very hard job.
But did you have something on an outfit?
No, I was in a hut, and I had a little peephole, and the reindeer in front of me, and I had handles, and I moved the handles to move their heads, and I squeezed the handles to open and close their mouths. And the first night I worked, Bo, the male reindeer, his handle was stuck. So I had to squeeze really hard, and I developed blisters on my fingers. But it was worth it in the end.
I know you. They'll never forget the things you said. I wish you had recorded them. There is a poem. Have you written Voice of a Reindeer? It's yet to be written.
Well, I do have a poem, but I didn't bring it today. But
well,
I do
I'm
have
glad
a poem about the reindeer. But yes, I do have one poem, reindeer poem.
Glad it wasn't lost. But tell us what is here before you. Shirley Brewer is here. We love her. She lights up the room when she walks in. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and here she is again.
This is a poem, a persona poem, about my mother and aunt. My mother and aunt were best friends. My grandparents were born in Lithuania, but my mother and aunt were born here, but they never liked to talk about their Lithuanian background. But my mother would tell me little details about her life. If it was for a poem, she would tell me little details. So in this poem, my mother and aunt were separated twice when they were children. My grandfather left the family, and my grandmother became very ill. So my mother went to an orphanage, and my aunt lived with relatives, and they were separated. But I didn't know till I interviewed my mother for this poem, how many years my mother had spent in an orphanage. I didn't know. And then when they were separated, when they were in their 90s, when my aunt developed a Alzheimer-type disease or dementia, and they still lived together, but my aunt wasn't really able to communicate well. So in this poem, kind of incorporates all of this. And this poem is called Voyage. My mother is speaking to her sister, Elvina. I never knew your childhood. You went to live in Cohocton with Aunt Emily and Uncle Al, and I was sent to the Hillside Orphanage. After a decade apart, I wondered if we would ever connect as sisters. We healed in our 20s, wore matching dresses to dances at Loon Lake, where suitors paid 10 cents each for a chance to whirl us across the hardwood floor. We sunned at the beach with wealthy girls who befriended us. We saved for months for that cruise to Cuba on the Swedish boat Carinthia. Wake up, Elvina. Do you remember the lizards in Havana? The white uniform you wore to the hospital pharmacy for almost half a century? Now you store trinkets in your old brassieres. Lockets, lace, a keychain from Kmart. B cups make the best containers, you say, when you can sequence your thoughts. Last week, I found a bra in the bathtub, a nameless cotton ship sailing toward the drain with your dentures in the hold. Pieces of you scattered all over the house, a wig in the kitchen, the artificial breast resting like a flower near the commode. Elvina, I promise you my presence on your voyage to 96. We leave the dock, the words behind us, together through the tangled wind. I was going for the image of the words being all tangled because my aunt had problems communicating. And then somehow I came up with the tangled wind, and I thought, well, where did that come from? I was going for the tangled words, and then I realized tangled wind was absolutely the right way to end the poem.
And that's another thing. Trust yourself. I mean,
trust the process.
And take a risk.
Yes.
It would have been much safer to say words. Because
right.
That was inevitability of it, and that would have brought it home. But you went with just the slant idea.
Exactly.
And it worked better.
I think so.
Shirley
yes.
Brewer, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we are thrilled to have her. Let's have another.
Oh, I'm going to do this gazpacho poem, because you mentioned it
before. I loved that.
Okay. So this poem is called Pompous Circumstance, and that's pompous spelled P-A-M-P-A-S. My friend said she'd bring gazpacho for lunch. I thought she meant her Argentine lover. I picture him in gaucho clothes, trousers, and a poncho, a triangle of curly black hair visible on his swarthy chest, a macho calling card. His feet shod in well-oiled boots, leather the scent of cattle bred on a high plateau, where a mescaline moon rules the desperado sky. They'll arrive on his horse, a giant speckled white. Her man's thick cowboy fingers tangle lightly on her knee. His chilly, tinctured breath releases heat and words that make her blush. When he speaks, his mustache straddles his tongue. I rush to meet them at the door, only to find my friend alone, clutching a plastic container of soup. Gazpacho, she says. I look behind her. Swear I see in the distance a horse's tail disappear around the shadowed bend.
Are you able to take every event and twist it to your liking? Is everything available to you?
I think so. Yeah, I'm always
You're not afraid.
Mentally noting what might be a poem, or well, maybe it could go into a poem.
Are you writing something right now? Are you writing a new book?
Yes. I'm writing a new book, working on two manuscripts. One is called Wild Girls, and that is, I consider, well, you know, we never say it's finished, do we? We're always working on it.
But it's a good title. It's
Wild Girls. And the newer one that is still coming together is called Goddess of Swizzle, Poems of Food and Drink. But not
really?
Not just food and drink. You know, nothing's just about food and drink.
Oh.
It's about life. You know, it's about everything.
Talking about swizzle. So you went to bartender school.
I did.
What did you learn?
Well, I love the names of the cocktails. I love the names, the words. And I love the idea that it's about mixing and mm-hmm. stirring. And this is what we do with poetry. I mean, we're mixing, we're stirring, we're garnishing, if you will. We're swizzling. You know, swizzling is that motion, but swizzle is also a type of dance. It just has many layers, as poems do.
We don't have a cocktail poem yet. Is that yet to come?
Well, I could certainly do a cocktail poem. I actually have a brand new poem that is a cocktail poem.
Well, we would love to know what your experience has come out, what art form has come from a perfect martini.
Well, I did read Mixing Manhattans in Heaven, which is one, and the other one.
I bet you got stuff for poetry out of that.
I met Muhammad Ali when I was bartending
many
years ago.
Well worth
the trip. So that was worth it. I have not written a Muhammad Ali poem.
There's always another day, right?
There's always another day. This is actually a brand new poem. I just brought it to my poetry group last weekend, and I've been working on the revision, so it still may develop further. But I think it's good in these sessions to read something that's fairly new. So this is called Undaunted, We Dare to Swizzle. At the intersection of gin and tonic, my friend laments a recent batch of poetry dismissals. So I plan to create a rejection highball laced with Campari, dark red, bitter. Consider history. Doesn't a cocktail always show up? I bet my gold necklace a guard slipped Anne Boleyn a cure royale to ease the sword's blow. Did Noah stay sober on the ark with all that honking and bleeding, the incessant roars? Happy juice garnishes paintings too. I know Vermeer can't defend himself, but the lass and girl with a pearl earring looks a tad tipsy. People perpetually pick on Picasso, his fondness for absinthe. No wonder he turned blue. Liquor barons named an espresso vodka after Van Gogh. Hanky-panky in movies called for bad lighting, good scotch. Bogey swilled gin in the African Queen. Whiskey sours mixed in pitchers signal the start of summer in our cul-de-sac. I brought my mother to the Yardarm Tavern in Annapolis the night my unwed sister gave birth to a baby girl. Mom down two Manhattans fell asleep in my VW bug. For 40 years, my father sang bass in a German choral group. He loved Genesee cream ale, asked for a beer garden at his wake. Add a tray of crackers with Limburger cheese, no speeches. Intoxicating, how words effervesce like music from a deep place. I tucked a poem of mine inside Dad's casket, one rejected by a journal the week before. So I guess in a way that's an Ars Poetica in some ways.
You know what makes that poem? Where it turns a corner. I brought my mom. We go through this lineage of drinks, and then you make a terrific right-hand swift turn with, read that line again. I brought my mom.
Do you remember when it was the Yardarm? And now it's called Blackwell Hitch, I think,
exactly.
At the corner in Eastport.
Exactly.
I brought my mother to the Yardarm Tavern in Annapolis the night my unwed sister gave birth to a baby girl.
Perfect. That one really just gleams in that poem. And then bringing your father also. Read that part.
For 40 years, my father sang bass in a German choral group.
Love it.
He loved Genesee cream ale, asked for a beer garden at his wake. And then this is a quote from him. Add a tray of crackers with Limburger cheese, no speeches. Intoxicating, how words effervesce like music from a deep place. I tucked a poem of mine inside Dad's casket, one rejected by a journal the week before.
Do you remember which poem that was?
Well, it was a poem I'm sure that had to do with my father.
Yeah.
But it's just like the thing, we send these poems out, but we keep going. We're undaunted because why do we write? We don't just write to get in the journals. That's not why I write. I mean, I love to get in the journals, don't get me wrong. But we write because we write because we write.
And then
we're going to
just
keep going. And
it's a life force.
It's a life force.
And so you tucked a life force into his coffin.
Yeah.
Good girl.
Absolutely.
And give us some more of your scintillating, life-giving poetry. Shirley Brewer is here. I'm Grace Cavalieri. I've been looking forward to this because every time she reads, I feel good.
This is a poem about another relative of mine, my father's cousin, Ted Adams, who lived, he was an English professor, and he lived in Albany, New York. And this is a true story. Staircase Anthology. A charmer at 88, his balance a personal earthquake, Ted recalls endless stanzas of poetry from college English. In his row house, the old professor climbs from his basement kitchen to the third floor for a nap, reciting the names of writers in alphabetical order, one name for each step. Shakespeare, Tennyson, Updike, Voltaire. On my visit, we alternate letters. When P stops me, Ted says Edgar Allan Poe, evoking a shudder of blackbird wing, a heart beating beneath the oaken floorboard. In his prime, Ted carried a worn briefcase stuffed with lecture notes, student papers, grades, a picture of Myrna Loy, the famous actress he met at a fancy soiree. According to local Albany legend, they entranced one another for hours while she ignored the moth holes in his woolen scarf. Ted knows he won't fall backward on his upstairs trek. Someone will catch him. Baudelaire, the daring Colette, a surprisingly strong Emily Dickinson, her hand a lyric support in the small of Ted's back. Writers never die. They stay with those who keep them alive.
That is an interesting construct, using the steps to get him where you need him to go.
And that's what he did.
I mean, it makes a perfect frame.
And even as that day, I remember going up the stairs behind him, I said, Shirley, this is a poem. This is a poem. This is truly a poem because this is how he gave himself the energy, took up the stairs.
But the fact that you saw that and was able to use it as a stairway to get where you needed to go in the poem is what you do. And so because of what you do, let us take a poem and just take it apart, read it, and then tell someone, I was here when I thought of this, this is why I did that, and see what happens.
All right, I think I got the right one for that. This. Okay, so this is a poem called Given the Space Between Trees. And there are kind of a lot of things going on here, but So I chose two. There's two epigraphs for this poem. Space, like time, is psychological as well as physical. And that was Georgia O'Keeffe. And Leila and Leydan Bijani, 29-year-old Iranian twins, joined at the head, died in Singapore July 8, 2003, during the surgery to separate them, given the space between trees. In the forest of my friend's backyard, I ponder the space between trees, openings where shadows mix with light. Space defines us, allows us to be who we are. It is the space we must water and nurture before we embrace another. Joined at the head, the sisters wanted a chance to know ordinary lives. They risked it all for a dream, the desire for a separate garden, a parcel of air between them. If you and I should join together, I hope we will remember the Persian twins who died for space.
So that is pretty easily understood. You took a metaphor.
Yeah, I was actually sitting I visited a friend in Boston and was sitting on the porch and was really looking at these trees and noticing for some reason that I was focusing on the space. I grabbed my tablet. I said, okay, I'm going to write about the space between the trees. But then it was in the news, was the big story that summer was about these twins, ironically from Iran, which is, of course, in the news right now. But these twins inspired me so much because they were brilliant young women, but they wanted their own lives. They didn't want to be joined at the head. They wanted to be, the risks were huge, but they went ahead with the surgery, and it was not successful. But I saved every single newspaper clipping about them. I just was so taken by their courage that they risked everything just for a little bit of air that we, space that we may take for granted ourselves.
And the poet's mind makes that permanent and gives them something. They have something now. They have, each one has her own space in your poem.
Exactly.
And now we will have a final poem.
Okay. So let me, I'll just read this poem because I think that we talk about little moments that we zero in on. Sometimes it's those little moments and little details. So I'd like to read. This was in my first book, Little Breast Music. It's called Between Trains, another poem about my father. My father drove us into the country to watch trains on Sunday afternoons in summer, the sun a golden gumball. We heard a series of whistles startle the air, felt vibrations in our young bones. Even though it made us dizzy, we counted cars. My brother's sing-song, my sister's one, four, six. My fingers moving like castanets, the caboose a red blaze. We waved at the engineers until sunburned arms grew sore in their sockets, our voices a trickle, throats soothed by Cokes and crackers thick with cream cheese. Between trains, my father made up tunes he played on a silver harmonica that dazzled in the light. Between the breeze-filled trees, he closed his eyes and cradled his songs. I can still see his skinny legs. Around his ankles, loose brown socks, like bird nests fallen from a branch.
The voice of Shirley Brewer. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family and the Sinipet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.